Politely Radio coming up next. Stay with us after that for Hip Hop Express at 6 o'clock, Blues Live at 8, and The Bachelor Pad featuring lounge music and exotica at 10 o'clock. Here is this week's Smile Politely Radio.
Time between the glory days and the golden years, she did the work of 28 able men. Sent Tommy off to school to be an engineer, and Sarah went to try out all the sins. She took to taking tea out in the Belvedere, bourbon in the evenings by the fire, as if the Great Depression never made it here, as if she had defeated her desire. She just wanted to ride in a Delahaye 135. She just wanted to ride. Doctor, then a lawyer, then a Roosevelt, tried to take her underneath the wing. And she was in her 20s in the Bible Belt, before she knew she didn't need a thing. She didn't need their pity on a single girl. She didn't need their help to raise the brood. Wouldn't be returning to her daddy's world. She didn't want a better attitude. She just wanted to ride in a Delahaye 135. She just wanted to ride.
You are listening to Smile Politely Radio. SmilePolitely.com is, of course, the place to go for all things local. Arts, food and drink, music, news and culture, and much more. I'm your host, Sean. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday afternoon, early evening, whichever you prefer. Our opening track was Hudson Commodore off of Jason Isbell's new album, Something More Than Free. Great artist, great album. Check it out. We've got a rebroadcast for you today. Which is going to be coming up in just a second if I can get the technicals working.
Well, can you, to get us started, can you just tell us a little bit about the concept of Bipicasso, the menu, and what people can find here?
I would say our cooking style more so is, we like to label it rustic, inspired, and seasonal. Rustic as in we don't do everything the traditional way. Inspired as we're actually using the ingredients that are available to us, and that's through our farms and through the seasons. The inspiration behind the restaurant is Victor Fuentes' inspiration, and it's kind of like my palette as I can form that into anything that I feel like the restaurant needs at any given time. From the old wood to the cutting boards that we use to plate, it's just a very, we want you to come in and be comfortable sort of place. So,
what's your own personal sort of culinary history?
I grew up here. I went to culinary school in Atlanta, Georgia. I worked for some great places down there. Moved home, worked for some spots in town, and then left again. I think I got my foundation, though, in Fort Worth, Texas. I worked for an amazing chef who's cooked in James Beard House a numerous amount of times, Molly McCook, and that restaurant was Ellerby Fine Foods. And I was a sous chef there in 2010. We were voted top 10 best new restaurants in America by Bon Appetit, and that was strictly farm to table. In Texas, you can manipulate your plants in a way of, they call it hot boxing their tomato plants in the winter, and they wrap them and they still produce tomatoes throughout the year. So when you go to culinary school, they say, you know, bounce around for 5 years and see what you're comfortable with and what makes you happy. And after that fifth year, I wasn't really happy with anything that I was doing and where I was going in the industry. So I just kind of got away again and kind of really got my foundation of seasonality and fresh ingredients from her in Fort Worth.
Sure. So being a chef, like, you can be a bit nomadic and sort of bounce around
you have
all
to be,
over
yeah.
the place. Yeah, you got to be ready to go. What were some of your inspirations as sort of, or, I mean, you mentioned your time in Fort Worth, but mm-hmm. are there any other restaurants that maybe you didn't cook at or did cook at that sort of influenced
I have Picasso? To influence the food at Picasso, from growing up in my uncle's garden to watching him cook every Sunday to cooking with my mom to being the only one responsible enough while she was working two jobs to use the stove in my house. kind of always just never really looked at a recipe book or looked at recipes online except when it has to come with baking pastry because you have to use recipes for that. But I would say that my influence is just the ingredients and what the people want to eat. If you come in here and you say, I don't see anything on my menu that I like, I'm going to say, what are your five favorite things to eat? And I'm going to cook you something that, hope to God, that you love when you leave here, you know? So not so much my inspiration. My inspiration is what brings people together, and that's food. And the community room in your house is the kitchen, and food makes people happy. So I wouldn't really say it's an inspiration per se of I have to cook this or I have to cook Italian food or French food. It's I want people to leave happy, and if that means I have to cook tofu or
even tofu.
If I have to cook tofu or, you know, stuff that I'm not comfortable cooking, I'll figure out a way how to cook it, and I'll figure a way to please your belly at the end of the day. So
could you give us some kind of highlights of the menu at Vie Picasso? I understand that Vie Picasso recently began offering brunch, for example, mm-hmm. and then we are sitting here in your restaurant and looking at what looks like a really delicious lunch menu. So maybe kind of walk us through some of the highlights, your personal favorite dishes or recommendations from the menus here.
We've been open for 2 months, and we've changed menu 3 times already.
Like you don't get bored.
No, we don't. And, you know, I mean, I think when you keep people on their toes, it keeps them entrenched in what you're trying to do as a restaurant. From the line cooks to the servers, you know, always learning, always trying something new. Not only does it make us grow, but also makes the palates of our guests grow. Highlights, the tomato salad is phenomenal with the warm, crunchy, but soft in the inside croutons. Simply dressed, just to highlight those ingredients. The pork belly flatbread is a lot of pork belly, a lot of caramelized onions, a little bit of brie, and someone had it last night, and they said it is the best flatbread I've ever had in my entire life. The Cuban burger is really good. We take shredded pork belly, we grind ham and beef, and we make this kind of like conglomerate pork belly ham and beef sandwich. It's all the components of a Cuban, but all smashed into one burger. So it's just flavor bites. As you bite, you'll taste the pork belly, you'll taste the beef, you'll taste the ham. And then, I mean, everything's I'm sorry. It's the ingredients, though. You know, we use Blue Moon Farm, and their spinach is beautiful, and it's perfect for wilting because it doesn't get too wilted. And so really, the fried green tomatoes people love. And again, I have that Southern influence in my cooking style, I think, for sure. But textures and for everything, yeah.
So, do you mind giving us a couple highlights of brunch? It's just about lunchtime, so everything that you were describing is making me really hungry, but anything from brunch is not to be missed.
The duck confit and fried farm egg. We use Willow Creek Farms right outside of Urbana, and we use our duck breasts. We get whole ducks in. We use our duck breasts for the dinner service, and then we confit our legs and simply slow cooking them in their own fat. Then we shred that with sweet potatoes, and then on top of it with a bunch of poblano, so you get a little bit of smoky and a little bit of spice, and then you get that sunny side up egg that just kind of melds everything together as its sauce. We make our own yogurt for our house granola and yogurt. Kayatate from Hopscotch does a wonderful job here. She's our pastry chef, and she's got her own little business on the side. She makes our granola for us.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. It's hard to go from one to the other, to be honest. Yeah.
So you've mentioned Willow Creek and you've mentioned Blue Moon. How important is, like, obviously the sourcing and how far you go to get the sources for the dishes you prepare? And how do you, like, establish those relationships?
Usually a simple email with nice words, you know, will get you a long way. Willow Creek is actually a really good family friend of Victor, the owner, and Sammy Fuentes, and she's doing lamb and cows and chickens, and that's where we get our farm eggs and a bunch of herbs and tomatoes and greens. And I think the relationship definitely has to be almost 60-40 to the farmer. It's a lot of work, and they're pouring just as much of their blood, sweat, and tears into their product as we are into ours. So really being on their side and paying the higher prices that you wouldn't normally pay if you were going through like GFS or Sysco or Performance Food Group, their spinach is $3 more a pound. And people don't realize, you know, when you wanna use local, like, you could buy an inferior, cheaper product, but people probably wouldn't really notice after it's cooked down. With say a spinach, Blue Moon is more expensive. But for us, we know where it comes from. We see it grow. We're invited out there anytime we want to. So that trust and that confidence behind that also, I think, plays a big part in the relationship as well.
So talk to us about wine. You have wonderful wine taps behind the bar here at Di Picasso. Can you tell us a little bit about how wines are chosen for the restaurant and why wines on tap?
Wines are chosen by a lot of trial and error.
we
taste a lot. And with you know, our assistant general manager, Matt Music, and our bar manager, Josh. I'm not even beginning to pronounce his name. He's told me 1,000 times, and I feel bad, but it's okay. Trial and error. Wine on tap, you know, I would say for sure that Champagne is definitely a beer town. From the monopoly of Blind Pig now in the back alley to Cowboy Monkey to the new one going on the corner. I think it's supposed to be a beer barn as well. And we have a really great micro brew beer list, but for us to really put a bunch of beer on tap and try to compete with those guys doesn't really make sense for us. Also, we're the first place in town with wine on tap, so it's kind of a cool little niche for us. It's basically the same way as beer, the way they pump it out, the way they preserve it. We just shoot a few different gases down there that sit on top of the wine to make sure that it stays fresh every pour. But we do always try to do 4 whites and 4 reds, and then the staples of Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and then for the reds, a Cab and a relatable Merlot or a Malbec. And then we have 4 that we play around with, and if one's a Prosecco right now. But we also try to tailor those to, one, the food, and two, the season. You don't want to drink a bunch of heavy red wines in the middle of summer. So we talk to our purveyors. You know, they bring us stuff into taste. We say, oh, yeah, this will go good with this new menu item that's coming out. Or, oh, this is perfect for sitting on the patio and sipping this for a couple hours and having a good time. So trial by error, but at the same time, the food and totally the season has a definite impact on the decision of what we put on the menu at any given time.
So besides the wine on tap, how many bottles do you have
We started out with about 40. We grew fast. There was a lot of wants and needs from our guests. They wanted to see it grow. We're more, I would say, West Coast, Napa, Oregon, with Washington-based winery wines that we have here. But so we have 60, I would say, now offered, and then 52 of those we actually open and we pour by the glass. So if you're not comfortable with anything, you come in, and all of those that we do pour by the glass, we also offer tastes. So if you're not comfortable spending $12 on a phenomenal Chardonnay from Napa Valley and you want to taste it before you commit to that purchase, like, by all means. Or if you want to taste a bunch of them, come in and
wine flights.
Yeah, wine flights. You come in and taste a bunch of them, and, you know, just because ordering wine in restaurants sometimes is very pretentious and people don't know what they're talking about, and they get very intimidated by the serving staff or by the people who are trying to sell them expensive bottles of wine. I would say 95% of our bottles are under $80, which is really cool and affordable for everybody, I would say. A special occasion, you know, night out with friends. And to be able to do that is very cost-conscious for our guests. But at the same time, we do have the nicer things that if you're coming out to celebrate, we also offer those as well.
So, could you talk a little bit about sort of the history of Be Picasso as a restaurant and its relationship to the community? I know that you were mentioning that the restaurant is distinguishing itself a little bit from the explosion of craft beer in this community, but I understand that Be Picasso started out in Urbana and then took a hiatus and is now trying out Champagne. So could you maybe talk a little bit about the previous iteration of the restaurant and why you decided to kind of relocate into downtown Champagne and start anew?
Definitely a relocation, but I think also maybe a rebranding. And I think that's what a lot of people who were used to the old Be Picasso haven't really seen yet, or the word hasn't really gone out yet, that it's kind of totally different than the one in Urbana. Just for some reason Urbana didn't work, and I don't know if that's foot traffic, or if I don't know if it's people that from Champaign didn't want to really travel over to Urbana and dine, but it didn't work, and they found out really fast it didn't work. I think we were only open for 10 months back in 2010-11. But when people ask the Be Picasso is anything like Urbana, and I say the name is probably the only thing that is very similar to the one in Urbana. The logo's changed, the decor's changed, the concept of food has changed, the wine's changed, the cocktails have changed. So we tried it in Urbana, and through problems, it just didn't work out. So we have this beautiful spot now in downtown Champaign where the foot traffic isn't the problem. You know, the people traveling to Champaign isn't the problem because the people are already here. And we just are trying, I think, to do it in a more methodical way than what they tried to do it the first time. And it's upset people. I've had to apologize for that because they were expecting the old Be Picasso. But I think what we have here is a rustic environment, a comfortable environment, a cozy environment, an environment to where you're going to get great food every time and phenomenal wines that not a lot of places in town carry. And so I would say it's more of a rebranding than anything.
Mm-hmm. What about the name Be Picasso? Do you know anything about its story, its origins? Like, why choosing Picasso?
I mean, that's a good question. I think V, and I've never asked my boss why he's named it Be Picasso, and that probably would have been a good question or an answer to have for you guys today. But I think V stands for Victor, and I think he likes Picasso's work. It's out of the box, and I think he thinks that way too. And if you look at the decor in the restaurant, I wouldn't say it's out of the box, but it's bright and it's bold, and it all doesn't look like it's going to go together, but it all does. When we were building out the restaurant, you know, you'd see something new go up every day, and you're like, is this really going to work with this? Is this really going to work with this? And then once it was all finished, it worked. And I guess the thing is when people were like, seeing V. Picasso paint all these masterpieces that everyone was just like, this isn't going to be worth any money. Like, I think his latest painting went for like $122 million, set records. So I think just a little bit of everything to make something beautiful. And then Victor is definitely behind that. From all the design that you see here, he says, he's probably going to kill me if I say this, but he spends a lot of time on Instagram and Pinterest. So I think it's him, and I think it's he can put something together that doesn't really look like it's going to go together. But on a Friday night when the lights are dimmed and everybody's got smiles on their face, I think it all makes sense there.
So there's some wonderful artwork in here.
Yeah.
And the light on these doors, the kind of rainbow texture is just gorgeous.
So doors have been open now, as you said, for about 2 weeks.
2 months.
2 months, yes. Sorry. 2 months. What's been the sort of reaction from customers so far? How's Champagne been treating you?
I think we've had more happy than not. Our goal every time when everyone walks into the door is to please everybody. And I think 98% we've pleased everybody, and we've seen a lot of repeat patrons, and which makes us happy, because if we see you coming back and coming back and coming back, we're obviously doing something right. But I think for the most part, I think it's been well received. You know, as the boss of the front and the back, there's a lot of things in my head that, you know, that are constantly turning that we could get better on that people don't see, and we'll get there. We're brand new. We opened during graduation month, you know, and Friday Night Live in our patio, and, you know, so our patio doubles the seats of our dining room. So on a busy Friday night and the tiny spaces that we have, we try to make everything as perfect as possible. But I'd say that everyone's been pretty happy about it. Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit more about your kind of food history and relationship with food? I know that you were mentioning that you have pretty eclectic cooking roots and that you enjoy cooking a wide variety of things. But when you're thinking about cooking for yourself personally, what kind of thing do you love to make for yourself for dinner? Or what are some dishes that you always return to and your kind of staples that really speak to you as a chef?
That's a hard question. I don't really have a lot of time to cook for myself. And then you're in the kitchen all day and you're tasting to make sure everything's good. Don't really go home hungry very often, but definitely when I'm at the house, I either like to smoke meat or grill out. You know, I like to be outside with my family. I always get roped into cooking too, which is fine, totally. But I'm definitely a meat and potatoes kind of guy, totally Midwest. But with, like, southern spices, and like fried green tomatoes. In the summer, you have to have them everywhere. My grandma used to make this amazing tomato, cucumber, and onion salad. That is a staple in the summer for me. Every day, I think I could eat it every day. It's addicting. But for myself, personally, I don't cook for myself. I cook for people. Sometimes I'm just happy with a bowl of cereal, you know, on the couch in the middle of the night. And I don't need to eat fancy food all the time. And gourmet food, I guess, is a better word for it. But I love cooking for my son. And he'll eat anything, which is amazing. He's 3 and a half. And usually whatever he's willing to eat, I'm willing to eat with him. But yes, cooking on the grill, being outside, being with friends, being with family. I think that's more important at the end of the day of who you share that time with than actually what you're putting in your mouth at the same time. So
the restaurant culinary scene in Champaign seems to have blown up in the past few years. I mean,
it's amazing.
Totally changed.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you have an opinion on what do you think is like still missing? Like, what is it you wish we had here that we don't?
There's a few things that I wish we had here that we don't. One of them I'm not going to discuss because it would be nice. It would be nice to have one. You know, I think everybody downtown does a great job. Thad is an amazing chef, and Bacro is an amazing restaurant. And, you know, whenever I get the time, that's where I usually try to migrate to. He's always doing crazy cool things over there. And Radio Maria's atmosphere and their food and the kitchen staying open late to, you know, eating fried food at Esquire sometimes is just nice. Big Grove does a great job, and we have enough sushi places, but Sushikami is great downtown, so is Co-Fusion. And it is an eclectic array of food that, I mean, I left for 4 years, and I came back, and I was just like, holy cow, you know, what happened? Which I think M1 and M2 helped out tremendously with that, you know. A lot of storefront, a lot of places to go. Miga is new, and They're great. I haven't been there once, and it was fabulous. You know, so at the end of the day, we need a few things. One of those I'm not going to say, but, you know, there's supposed to be an Italian restaurant opening next door to us. I heard fall, and he's a great guy. I heard his food is amazing. He's got three restaurants in Chicago right now, and he's got great food. But to saying that, we have all these places. I think competition brings out the greatness in everybody. It doesn't let you stand on your toes too long. You know, you're always looking for that next change to those people venture to radio on a Thursday. Well, you want to bring them here on a Friday, you know? So I think competition, you know, breeds more competition. And I definitely think we have enough people in the town to support all these great establishments. We need something. So I'm keep my mouth shut on that one.
Well, just in our last minute or so, I was curious because you mentioned having like a Midwestern food taste, this kind of meat and potatoes food taste. And so I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on what Midwestern cooking means, and maybe even more specifically what Champaign-Urbana cooking means. Is there a local flavor or a set of flavors that really describe the place where we live?
I think Midwest is just really starch and meat, to be honest. Maybe a few vegetables here and there, but I mean, people come in here, they want steak and potatoes, or they want the lamb. I mean, the pork shank that we do right now, you know, is just a big piece of meat with a little bit of green underneath of it. I am Midwestern at heart, but I totally dig the barbecue scene, the southern scene, and I mean that's where I got my foundation cooking with my uncle when I was a kid. And every Sunday, we'd have to pick all of his vegetables out of his garden, and then we got to watch the smoker smoke for 7 hours before we got to eat whatever was in it, you know. So, but I also think, too, that people are, especially with so many options in town now, people are slowly changing their tastes to allow themselves some more. Somebody came in as their first patron, and on our first menu, we had a braised rabbit and morel pasta. He said, "I don't think you're going to sell that. I don't think people are going to go for rabbit in this town." I said, "Oh, we'll see." It was our number one selling dish, our last menu. So, you know, you take people's feedback and you think, and you want to be out of the box, but you don't want to be too far out of the box to scare people away. But that's why you see quail, and the rabbit will come back probably in the fall. And I think more so, though, too, in the Midwest in the summer, is the seasonality of everything, and you can pretty much grow anything, and you have the rain for it, and the hail might destroy some things, but You have such great soil to grow anything that you want that I think that's where our focus needs to be as a restaurant. So.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Again, that was a rebroadcast of our interview with Adam Schellenberger, the head chef and manager at the new V Picasso in downtown Champaign. You've been listening to Smile Politely Radio on WEFT 90.1 FM. To finish us off today, we're going to hear a track called Queen by Perfume Genius off his album Too Bright. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Hip Hop Express coming up next.
Don't you know you're queen? We are flower bloom at my feet. Don't you know you're queen? Cracked.